my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for my 1-2-3 cents of a podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me the hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo!
Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 151 of my 1-2-3 cents, the podcast. And this week, we are going back to our 6 cents idea. This is something that Chad and I did to rip off Tom and Jim's top five podcast, which is a great podcast, by the way. Check it out. But about once a month or so, we do a top six list, because we add up the numbers of my 1-2-3 cents and come up with 6 favorite moments or memories of a particular era. The first time we did it, it was summertime matches or moments. This time we are doing Kane, the history of Kane. All goes back to 20 years ago this past week. So we'll get to that in just a second, and I'll bring Chad in just a second. But first, I'm going to do a real quick plug. Stride Pro Wrestling, a big show Friday night in Pinckneyville, Illinois, with several big things happening, including Dexter Roswell losing that paddle on a pole match and ended up getting some swats. Ricky the Dragon Steamboat was the special guest referee in that match. Jerry Travelstead, of course, won. Heath Hatton is the new legacy champion. His career was on the line. So was general manager Sam Hunter's. And we also saw Big Roger Mathis walk out still Stride Pro Wrestling heavyweight champion after being disqualified against Jay Spade. That rematch, though, by the way, happens this Saturday night. So be sure to join us at the Illinois Star Center Mall. It is a costume night as well. So come in costume, have some fun. It'll be a great night. Again, Stride Pro Wrestling Friday night. I'm sorry, Saturday night, October 14th at the Illinois Star Center Mall. And Chad is here on the line as well, and we'll talk a little bit more about what's going on with you, Chad.
Not a whole lot. I'm just now curious what your costume is going to be for Saturday night.
Well, you're
in a suit. Are you going to bust out an old WrestleMania cosplay outfit?
You know, those are some good ideas. I want to surprise the fans, so I'm not going to say it on air. I'll tell you off air though, and see what you think about it. So it's going to be a fun night.
I'm going to suggest, you know, maybe Golga or the Executioner, Conquistador number 6. Maybe a Milano 27.
So, yeah, I guess you're trying to keep my beautiful face covered up, huh?
That's the intent, is to make it so the crowd is not disgusted. Yes.
I could always fire up the line and get my friends from Podzilla 1985 on the show, because they love and respect the work of Kevin Huntsberger, unlike my friends here.
I'm glad that your mom and dad send them a monthly check to promote you on a weekly basis. So,
yes, I am going to shout out to them. They shout out to my 1-2-3 cents on a pretty consistent basis, or just me in general. So Shannon and Allie and Asa and Dalton, who have been on the show before. They are the primary host of Pro Wrestling Unscripted, but there are several great shows over on the Podzilla Network, Podzilla 1985 Network, as there are here on Jittery Monkey. And Chad, what do you have in the works coming up for Positive Cynicism? Anything on the calendar?
I have no idea, because right now my topic that I'm thinking of for the next show is just kind of recapping some of the news stories from the past couple weeks. But I really don't want to do that because, well, you know, I'm trying to be less cynical and less abrasive. But ideas that are in the works are kind of more pop culture related. You know, I've been talking with a friend about doing a breakdown of the, I don't want to say necessarily the history, but and I say this as after just saying going to be less cynical, but looking at Hollywood blockbusters and how know, they've changed throughout the last 30 years, and now Hollywood only focuses on such movies, and it's, in my opinion, kind of ruining the movie-going experience. And also looking at sex and violence in film, and why violence is, you know, looked at not necessarily favorably, but you can get away with a lot more violence than you can nudity and sex. And
so you want more nudity in movies, is what you're saying?
Well, it all depends on the kind, I guess you would say. You know, if you ever saw About Schmidt.
I have not.
Okay, well, look it up.
But no, that's the Jack Nicholson one, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't want to see any nudity in that.
Well, there is some. But, no, it was, did you see Kingsman? Not the sequel that just came out, but the original one from a couple years ago.
Dude, I'm horrible at movies, no.
Okay, well, I was watching it because I had not seen it until a few weeks ago before the sequel came out. And I hadn't paid much attention, but Kingsman is a very violent film, and it's not, I don't even want to say it's like cartoony violence. I mean, it is a little over the top, but it's kind of a realistic-esque violence. And then there's a line at the end of the movie, because it's a kind of a spoof of James Bond films or spy films. And if you are familiar with James Bond, you know there's a lot of like sexual innuendos and double entendres.
Sure.
And at the end of Kingsman, there's a very blunt sexual reference. And apparently that caused some controversy when it came out that the female character would say this, but yet the violence was like, cool, no problem there. So yeah, it's just looking at the way that we treat sex and violence in pop culture.
Interesting. Okay.
So now when that show comes out, it may be in 2 weeks. It could be in 2 months. It all depends on schedules and lining people up. So
sounds good. Well, again, you can listen to Positive Cynicism as well as the Five Hearts Podcast and Nerds United, all here on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network. And actually, I'm going to jump real quick, if you don't care, to Stride this Saturday night. I just got the card sent to me. We're going to get Roger Mathis versus Jay Spade in a 2 out of 3 falls match. Chris Hargis finally gets his hands back on Red Daniels after being suspended for 30 days. And as of right now, it looks like there's going to be a tag team fatal four-way with four different teams happening, going for the tag team championships, of course, held by Maximum Overdrive. The DR party's involved in that, as well as El Magnifico and J.D. Wilkes, and Joey O'Reilly and A.T. Brooks. So we'll have all the details again over at my123cents.com, as well as StridePro Wrestling.com. Check it out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. But without any further ado, let's talk about the Big Red Machine, Kane, who...
Okay, well, I'm going to jump in real quick.
Okay.
Because I know this will probably come up in the discussion, but I currently have Bad Blood 1997 playing as we record this. And right now the Mexican Minis match is on, and I think Stride needs to bring in some Mexican Minis.
Well, we could probably do that. I'll talk to my people and see who we can get. But
I'm sure El Magnifico probably has some contacts.
That's exactly who I was thinking. I know that that he has friends in low places, so I'm sure he could round us up some. But speaking of, you're watching the pay-per-view, and that is where Kane kind of came to be. A little fun fact about that event, besides the fact that you and I were both there, that was Vince McMahon's last call as a commentator for WWF. That was the last pay-per-view event he did, because then after that it was Survivor Series, and then of course the whole evolution of the heel Mr. McMahon character came about.
Yeah. And you know who else is doing commentary? Tito Santana, who you interviewed for another show.
Yeah. He's on Bad Blood?
Yeah, he's the Spanish announcing. He and Carlos Cabrera.
Wow, I forgot that he had done that.
Yeah.
And it's different when you're actually at the event versus watching it back. And, you know, 20 years later, I still haven't watched it back, but I'm definitely going to after hearing that's the subject of this week's Something to Wrestle With podcast as well. So I'll go back and listen or watch and see that show because, you know, I was up in a box with some friends who won tickets from a radio station. So our view was not the typical fan experience when you're kind of in the crowd and watching as well.
Yeah, well, and I remember, too, and I think because this is going to be a Kane-centric show, we might not bring this up, so I'm going to bring it up now. This was the day that Brian Pillman passed away.
Yes. Well, the day after. They announced it.
Well, the day that he was found, yeah. And to the live audience, there was no mention of his passing.
Right.
And so that's why, like, we got the Mexican mini tag team, and then I believe they added a DOA versus El Bariqua's eight-man tag.
Yes, it was,
Yeah, and we're sitting there going like, okay, where's Goldust and Brian Pillman? Why aren't they? And it wasn't until the next morning when I got online to see that Pillman had passed away. And I know that they did something on the free-for-all, and McMahon mentioned it on commentary. But yeah, I found it kind of odd that they didn't, and I don't know if they did that just to not, you know, depress the audience or get a reaction, but it was very odd that they didn't make any mention of it, of even, like, just the match not happening.
Right, and the match was actually supposed to be Mankind versus Brian Pillman, with Goldust handcuffed at ringside, I think, because that was when Goldust and Pillman were doing their whole thing with Marlena.
Yes, Marlena had been Pillman's...
Slave?
Slave, I guess, yeah, if you want to...
We'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was odd too. And you said you went online. I remember because I had to be at work early the next morning. I worked at a TV station in St. Louis, and I used to call this wrestling. There used to be a wrestling hotline that would do updates every week, and I called that. And that's actually how I heard the news, was on that wrestling hotline, because obviously 20 years ago was way before smartphones or social media or any of that kind of stuff. So. It was a shock for sure, and Pillman obviously sorely missed. One of the best for sure. I enjoyed his work in WCW, and then, you know, he was just really coming into his own when he and finally cleared to wrestle when he came to the WWF after breaking his foot. So a big tragedy for sure, and kind of set the tone, because listening back and as you're watching it back, I don't know if you can tell a somberness in the mood and the atmosphere watching it on TV versus being there in the live crowd, but obviously we had no idea at that time.
Right.
So,
I think, you know, they credit Michaels as coming up with, let me rephrase this. Due to Michaels's actions on TV or at tapings, Pritchard mentioned on the Something to Wrestle podcast that Vince then coined the term attitude, needing, you know, everybody needing attitude based on Michaels. But I think really Pillman was the one from his day, you know, when he got released from WCW and his short stint in ECW, that, you know, I'm not gonna say he created Attitude Era, but
he definitely contributed to it.
Contributed, yeah. He had the attitude that became kind of synonymous with that time period.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk more about Kane and find out our top six memories, moments of involving Kane. And again, these are our favorites. It doesn't necessarily mean it's the best, because obviously opinions are subjective and viewpoints and whatnot. So what do you have for your number six?
Well, yeah, I was going to say these are like six more. It's more like six that just jumped out at me.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily like favorites or memorable. It's just like trying to think of the ones that, over the last 20 years, what has stood out. So I'm going to go start off number five with...
Number six.
Or number six, yes. I have it listed as five because I just typed these out randomly. Number six is, you know, a day that will live in infamy. And that date is May 19th.
So what is the significance of May 19th?
Well, I believe... In storyline, if I'm correct, because again, I failed to research this properly, I believe that's the day that Kane's family, their house burnt down and he lost his parents.
That was the day of the fire, yes.
Yes. In reality, it was the day that See No Evil hit theaters as one of, I believe, one of the first WWE films And so to promote it, they tied into a storyline of May 19th. Whenever Kane heard May 19th, he would freak out and go crazy. And it's become, I don't know, to me, a running gag of whenever, I think when we saw Kane at one of the WrestleMania accesses, like, you just walk by and you kind of under your breath be like, May 19th, and you see what happens. But yes, so See No Evil, the release, and, you know, I've never seen the film, so I guess I did not see, I saw No Evil. But so that's my number six.
Yeah, same boat. I have not seen See No Evil either.
After the story about, like, Vince McMahon, one of the things he wanted to be included in the movie, correct?
Say that again?
Allegedly, when they were writing the story or when Vince was giving script notes, in a polite, non-explicit way, I think he wanted Kane's character to have his own Rocky Johnson, if you will.
Okay.
Supposedly, Kane was supposed to have a very large penis.
Okay.
Yes.
You can say that on the air. It's cool.
Well, I try to be tactful.
I want him to have a big penis. That's my Vince McMahon impression. Not very good. My number six is when Kane actually cashed in the Money in the Bank briefcase against Rey Mysterio at the 2010 pay-per-view. If my memory serves me correctly, Kane had not held the championship since 1998 when he beat Steve Austin for it and was literally a one-day champion and kind of was still toward the top of the card, but, you know, and had reinvented himself several times through that time. But he actually came out and saved Rey Mysterio from Jack Swagger's beatdown after Mysterio beat Swagger. And it looked like Kane was there to be his friend. And as he is brawling to the back with Swagger, Rey is in the ring celebrating. And then all of a sudden, the fire goes off and Kane's music hits and he walks out with a briefcase. And then he just decimates Rey and captures his second run as World Heavyweight Champion.
Yeah, that's actually my number five.
Oh, well, sorry.
I figured we're going to have probably a lot of similar things on here because when looking over Kane's history, I think there are just a couple of really major points that stand out. So,
Well, do you have anything else to add to that?
I'm trying to think if that was the first cash in on the pay-per-view itself.
Yes.
The first time we cashed in that night. So
it was. That's
what made it a little memorable. And, you know, I enjoyed it because as big of a fan as I was of Rey Mysterio in WCW and his early days in WWE, he's just not someone that I felt is a credible champion. And, you know, especially during his first reign of champion when it was the Eddie Guerrero tribute.
Mm-hmm.
Mysterio being a champion just, I don't know, you know, you can look at it like Daniel Bryan beating Big Show and Mark Henry and, you know, in three-way matches, and you can suspend disbelief because Daniel Bryan is such a good, talented, technical wrestler, but Mysterio's size, it just, I don't know, I never bought into him as a main champion.
That's a fair assessment. So
I was glad to see Kane cash in.
Yeah, and you know, Kane obviously went on, and we'll get to it later in the list, I'm sure, for one of us. My number five actually was one that you just kind of mentioned, and that was meeting Kane at WrestleMania 22 Access. It was April 2nd, 2006, but it wasn't so much the meeting of him that was cool, but one of my favorite pictures that I've ever taken at a WrestleMania, and it was because this was, other than his debut, this was the first time I saw Kane live and in person at an event. And I love the fire and what goes on with that. And I took a picture right as the fire was shooting off, and Carlito and Chris Masters are in the ring because Kane and the Big Show are going to defend the tag team titles against them. And it's just one of my favorite photos that I've taken, but it's just that memory of seeing him live and in person and getting that, because you see that fire on TV and it's impressive, but when you're there and the whole set kind of goes ablaze after as the effects, WWE does an outstanding job with that. And with his entrances, that is one that they've actually been able to be really creative with and do some fun stuff with.
I agree. That was actually a fun match, and being our first WrestleMania experience, it was a good time. And first superstar, I guess, interaction, autograph session. So
yeah,
that was a good time. And the one we're like, we'll never do this again.
And then we went back 8 more times.
Yeah, 8 WrestleManias later. All right. Well, my number. Let's see, what am I up to?
You'd be 4.
4. You'd be 40. Yes. Isn't really, I mean, it's a Kane moment, but it's not a Kane moment. And that is, and this is when I was trying to research again all the details right before we went on. So hopefully you can flesh out my memory. It's when I remember Kane came down to the ring and was attacking someone, and then he rips off the mask, and it's not Kane, it's The Undertaker.
Oh, yes, that was good.
Yeah, I thought, I mean, because this was, you know, it wasn't spoiled to be like, oh, here's what's going to happen on Raw tonight. And it looked like there was no, I'm trying to think, because I think there have been like some other instances where you can be like, oh, you know, I mean, you can look back for us old school fans, you know, when they had the machines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the giant machine, which everybody knew was Andre. And then, you know, they had the Hogan machine and the Piper machine, which really were not that cleverly named to disguise who they were. but this was – I don't think anybody saw or expected The Undertaker to be under the Kane mask.
Yeah, this was the build-up to the Steve Austin Undertaker match at SummerSlam. And if I remember correctly, it was Mankind who was – Undertaker as Kane hit him in the head or something with a chair. It was a pretty brutal chair shot, and then he unmasked himself. Because this was about the same time – it was an interesting feud going on with Austin and Undertaker, Kane and Mankind. They were all kind of intertwined in this.
Yeah.
And it was following the Hell in a Cell or the King of the Ring night where Undertaker and Mankind did the Hell in a Cell, and then Austin lost the championship to Kane and then got it back. And there were still all four of these guys were all kind of in and out of that feud, which I thought was really good. And I completely forgot about the Kane or Undertaker as the Kane character for that Monday Night Raw. That was good.
Yeah. And then, you know, later on, WCW would steal that gimmick with DDP dressing up like La Parca. So, but you got to give it to the original. Like, yes, it was well done. And like you said, I mean, you just mentioned like storylines that kind of crossed over into other storylines organically and not being forced into, you know, when now the generic booking the week before a pay-per-view is to throw two matches together into a multi-man tag match.
Yeah.
That's done very well.
Very good.
So
good pick. Good pick. My number 4 is Kane's domination of the 2001 Royal Rumble. And I believe this is the year he obviously, I think this was the year that Drew Carey was in it, and Drew Carey just eliminates himself. Was that the year?
I believe so, but the proper way to say that is WWE Hall of Famer Drew Carey.
Yes, it pains me to say that. And, you know, I didn't do my due diligence on this particular pick. I want to say he eliminated 11 guys that year, maybe 12.
I think that was the record until – doesn't Roman Reigns have it now?
Roman Reigns has it now, yeah.
Yeah, because eventually people will care about Roman Reigns.
Eventually. So, yeah, that's my number 4.
Okay.
11 eliminations, yes. I just looked it up.
11 Eliminations, okay. Who were they?
Well, Drew Carey was one of them. A Honky Tonk Man was one of them.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. My number three, I'm sure it's on your list. I'll be surprised if it's not. But it's Team Hell No.
Yes.
You know, this was.
Yes. Yes.
No. No. I put it on there. It was just one of those things that I thought was kind of like too stupid that it was good.
Right.
Like the whole counseling sessions, group therapy, and then forming a tag team. And I think Daniel Bryan kind of it helped get Daniel Bryan over even a little bit more with the crowd, even though he was already over, putting him, you know, in like the six-man tag with Kane and Undertaker. And it was just a fun, stupid angle that worked.
Yeah.
And WWE was smart enough to kind of run with it and let it play out.
Yeah, it really did develop organically. Again, we talk about that. And that is my number two, by the way. The whole, the vignettes they did, the build-up to it. And then it kind of is reminiscent of how Sheamus and Cesaro are now, where they kind of started off as enemies, but then they've teamed up, and now they care about each other, and they became a formidable tag team. So, and this also kind of goes to, I don't know when we'll talk about it, or if I'll get a chance to say it, now or any other time during the show, but this is a testament to Kane, I think, as being one of those guys who has been around for 20 years. And I know the past year or so he's been off, and I'm assuming that's as he's running this campaign for running for the mayor of Knox County in Tennessee. But you know, he went from that big red monster with the mask and the full red bodysuit and kind of evolved and unmasked and then went back to the mask and then became Hell No guy and then became Corporate Kane. You know, the evolution of the character has obviously helped him become one of the most iconic figures in WWE history, I think.
Yeah, I mean, true. And it, you know, you can look even at his previous stints in WWF, his characters that didn't have longevity, like even had they been popular or pushed, I don't think Isaac Yankum or Fake Diesel would really have stood the test of time. But I think Kane has been able to, and I think that's the difference between a character and a gimmick. And a character you can add depth to and you can evolve, whereas a gimmick is just kind of flat.
Yeah, absolutely. That is a good point. That is a good point. My number three is when Kane beat The Undertaker at Hell in a Cell 2010. He was defending the World Heavyweight Championship. And at some point during the match, Kane got a hold of the urn. Maybe it was Paul Bearer was back with the Undertaker. This was, you know, Paul Bearer kind of bounced back and forth. And I think Kane was working as a heel at this point again. And anyway, the urn opened up at some point and Undertaker was blinded by the flash of light. Kane then used it on the Undertaker, choke slammed him and ended up pinning the Undertaker, which I don't know for sure, but this is one of the very few times that Kane actually beat The Undertaker by pinning him. And to me, it kind of, even though he had been around for 12 years at that point, or 13 years at that point, it kind of finally brought some credibility, I think, to him finally being able to beat The Undertaker in a championship match, even though, you know, it was by obviously cheating, but it kind of solidified him as one of those, because I always viewed Kane as kind of a upper tier guy, but then that really made him kind of a main event player, even though he was already the champion.
Yeah, I had forgotten about that match because, again, there are so many matches these days.
Yeah, well, you know, 20 years with 12 pay-per-views a year, and he was on most of them. So, yeah, it was hard to kind of narrow down. And like you said, these were more of the ones that came to my mind immediately. I didn't, like, go in research and try to find Kane moments. It was stuff like organically that kind of came to us. So you picked my number two with Team No, Hell No. So what's your number two?
My number two is probably one of my favorite reasons why a feud has ever started. And that is when Chris Jericho spilled coffee on Kane.
Oh, yes.
Probably not one of the best moments in wrestling or in Kane's history, but it's just one that has stuck with me because the ludicrousy of just, you spilled coffee on me, now we have to fight.
It's almost as good as the shampoo commercial feud between Edge and Booker T.
Yeah, it's just one of those things, and I couldn't even tell you like what show Jericho and Kane fought on or what the rest of the storyline. All I remember is spilling coffee. And you never spill the coffee.
Don't spill the coffee. Well, and I think it was on a Raw or SmackDown where the initial spill happened, but yeah, like you said, I don't remember where they went from there, but that is one of the more ludicrous ways, I guess, to, as you mentioned, start a feud. But as far as number one, I have a feeling we both have the same pick here.
I mean, because it hasn't come up yet, I'm going to say I think so, but go ahead and say your number one.
His debut, October 5th, 1997, the Hell in a Cell. We were there. Didn't know each other, obviously, at that time. But Kane, the storyline, I guess, had been building up that Paul Bearer had a surprise for The Undertaker. He had found his brother Kane, which if you go way back in WWE history, when The Undertaker first debuted, his name was Kane the Undertaker. And I don't know if this was all just coincidental or if they legitimately, at one point or another, planned to bring in a character called Kane. But Glenn Jacobs fit that bill. He comes in, rips the cage door off of Hell in a Cell because nobody can get in or out, allegedly, and goes in there. Tombstone pile drives the Undertaker and leaves him out. And, I mean, he was so jacked and so big and just this monster. I mean, he was a legitimate monster heel. Like, I like to talk about monster heels. He was that guy for so long. And even after that debut and what he was doing and beating up and attacking everybody and the ring turning red and the fire and the, you know, the hellfire and brimstones, as JR would shout. It's just so, it was done so well. And Glenn Jacobs, I mean, let's face it, you mentioned it earlier. Fake Diesel and Isaac Yankum, and even when he was the Christmas creature back in Smoky Mountain or USWA, wherever that was. I mean, he was saddled with a bunch of stupid gimmicks, and this finally, right gimmick, right guy, and he just ran with it.
Yeah, that is my number one pick as well. And like you said, the storyline had been building to it. I think everyone in the arena that night expected Kane to show up,
mm-hmm.
So no one knew what to expect when Kane showed up. I think it goes back to, and we can sit and complain about the storytelling today, but this seemed like there was a long-term plan in place, or at least, a month-long plan that was built up and had a decent payoff, and I don't think it hurt the end of the match that much, even though the whole point of the Hell in a Cell was that, two guys locked in so that there could be no interference. And, my memory, too, of this night is after the show was over, because it said Shawn Michaels, did a pretty bad blade job during the match.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, after the show, my cousin and my friend Jeremy that we were with, we're standing out by the entranceway where the wrestlers, or the entrance to the underground parking garage where the wrestlers would come out. And we were waiting to see, who would come out, and we had signs and everything. And pretty sure I got flipped off by Vince McMahon when it came off. But there was an ambulance coming out, and we looked across the street, and Triple H was sitting in a car waiting to follow the ambulance. So it's little things like that that kind of make the show more memorable than your average show. But yeah, I think, and unfortunately, you know, we mentioned Pillman's passing earlier in the show. Bad Blood was not a good show. I think it's really a one-match show because you had the injury to Austin at SummerSlam a couple months before, so he was still out. Pillman's death, and, you know, when you have, like, Bret Hart is the Patriot in a flag match, and I'm trying to think what else is on the show that is even worth mentioning.
LOD against the Nation of Domination.
Yeah, 3-on-2 handicap match because Ken Shamrock was injured.
Yeah, it was an unfortunate set of circumstances that I think kind of drug that show down as well.
Yeah, but that match, the Hell in a Cell match, I think saved the show.
Yeah,
and is probably, off the top of my head, probably one of only two or three matches that I could come up with that I would say, if I were rating it, would be a 5-star match.
Mm-hmm.
And then you add Kane's involvement, and it just, I mean, it played out well, and it's kind of set, you know, the next few steps in play for what would happen leading up to WrestleMania. So,
yeah, of course, you know, Undertaker and Shawn wrestled again at the Royal Rumble, and that was the night that it was a casket match. Undertaker ends up in the casket, and they set it on fire. I think Kane and Paul Bearer were involved in that as well. And then, of course, because Undertaker, the whole story was he's not going to fight his little brother. And then, of course, come WrestleMania, what would that have been? WrestleMania
15.
Yeah, they finally end up going at it and having that matchup. So great build-up and storyline there, I thought, with Kane and The Undertaker. And then, of course, they became the Brothers of Destruction and won the tag team titles, and then they feuded, and then they got back together. So they've had a fun history as well.
Yep. Yeah, I think one other honorable mention, speaking of Undertaker feuding and Kane feuding and becoming friends, and feuding and becoming friends, is their match at SummerSlam, I want to say it was 2000. Where Undertaker ripped off Kane's mask, and the match just kind of ended, and they cut away, and then it was never mentioned again.
Oh, so really?
I don't know what that was all about, but yeah.
Interesting. I don't remember that. I'll have to go back and look. Well, we have some comments from some of the friends of My 1-2-3 Cents, and I want to read a few of those real quick for you as well. You can always weigh in and offer suggestions for future 6 Cents episodes, because we do enjoy doing these countdown lists, and let us know. And maybe even if it's not a wrestling-related one, we can do something pop culture-y over on Positive Cynicism, or maybe do our top 6 political moments. I don't know. But Asa Gray from Podzilla 1985, as we mentioned, and Cape Championship Wrestling, his debut, that cemented my status as a wrestling fan. He is still my all-time favorite. So Asa, thanks for weighing in. Barry, and I'm going to butcher his last name, Carafa, he is involved with Cape Championship Wrestling and has come over and supported Stride in the past. Kane's career was inspiring to several generations of wrestling fans. As Asa mentioned, it cemented his status as a fan. When my son Rollins first became a fan of WWE, he was 2 at the time, and Kane was his favorite. 17 years after that debut, Rollins was Kane 24/7 and even dressed up as him for Halloween, and he shares that picture. I'll put the picture on the write-up as well. So Kane is a WWE success story, from horrible gimmick and impersonations to a character that remains relevant and has reinvented himself for 20 years. So yeah, totally agree with the horrible gimmicks. We mentioned that earlier and kind of rebuilding himself. Matthew Vanderbilt, a friend of mine from work, says the 2001 Royal Rumble. William Hanks was also at that debut and calls that his favorite moment in 1997. And J. Ryan Abney, I like his Kane hooking the jumper cables up to Shane McMahon's balls while he was handcuffed to the ring post, LMAO, or Kane knocking out JR and setting him on fire. Those were two of those moments, too. You know, the jumper cable thing, that was after he pile drove Linda, I think, wasn't it? And they were building up to that match at Survivor Series.
I believe so.
I think that was a Falls Count Anywhere or an ambulance match or something like that, because I remember Kane tombstone Shane onto an ambulance, I thought.
Yeah, I think it was an ambulance match. I believe Shane won the match.
No, I think Kane won it.
Did he?
I'm pretty sure Kane actually won that one. And then, of course, and that was one that I was going to mention as an honorable mention when it was so cheesy, the whole, that was kind of when, I think that was when Kane then went back to the quote-unquote dark side and started wearing the mask again, maybe, when he set JR on fire, and it was clearly not JR on fire, but the voiceover of him, "Oh, my back, I'm on fire," or whatever he was doing. I don't know why it's funny to me, but really probably shouldn't have been. So any other thoughts or moments, memories of Kane that you want to share before we put a bow on this one?
You know, one of the other dishonorable mentions I would say that and no one brought up is when Luke Gallows was fake Kane for like 2 weeks.
You know, I was going to bring up our least favorite moments, and that would definitely be one of them for sure, yes.
And that was one that I don't know what the plan was, but they just seemed to give up on it very quickly, and it just had Kane throw him out of a building and be like, and take the mask and say, "This is mine, get out of here," and then it was over.
Now, had he already done the Festus gimmick, or did he come back as Festus? Do you remember?
I want to say he had been Festus.
Okay, I think you're right about that.
Because I remember, like you know, reading the dirt sheets of who it was under the mask and having a point of reference, because I don't know of Luke Gallows before Festus.
Yes, true.
And apparently, Luke, from a story I read back when the club debuted in WWE, is Vince McMahon doesn't even remember Festus.
Oh, jeez. All right. Well, we want you to remember my 1-2-3 cents. We want you to remember positive cynicism and Jittery Monkey in general. Be sure to like the Jittery Monkey Facebook page if you haven't already. We're trying to build more content over there as well and posting things that kind of cover all the genres that the podcast do cover. And if you haven't already, too, go and rate and review Positive Cynicism and My 1-2-3 Cents, the Five Heart Podcast, as well as Nerds United on iTunes. And if you do that, take a screenshot and hashtag it and let us know on Jittery Monkey's Twitter page or on the Facebook page or our personal pages. Chad, anything else you want to plug before we wrap up?
Let's see. We're recording this before Hell in a Cell.
Yes.
So any thoughts on that? Nope, I think I'm good. I mean, hockey season has begun, so there will probably be some hockey-themed episodes of Positive Cynicism coming up as well. And, yeah, that's all I got.
Alrighty, and Chad did mention Hell in a Cell, of course. We are recording before that event. We'll have reactions and thoughts over on Facebook and Twitter, and I will talk to Chad and make sure that he is positive in his cynicism of the event, because I'm sure there will be some comments made. Everyone, thanks so...
I'm saving my comments for when Asuka makes her debut at TLC.
Alrighty. Well, we'll look forward to that. And again, everyone, thanks again for listening to the show. And we will talk again next week. Have a great week, everyone.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.